Welcome into Real Pod Wednesdays. Dan Hope joined by Andy Anders just 3 days before Ohio State's 2024 spring game. A spring game that I believe for the second year in a row is going to be dominated by the storyline of the quarterback competition, because we may have thought coming into the spring that Will Howard would go into this spring game as the clear front runner, but it doesn't really feel that way anymore. It feels like Devin Brown has made this thing a real competition for the starting job, and so has true freshman Julian Sayin, who lost his black stripe earlier this week. And during Ryan Day's press conference on Wednesday, a lot of questions being asked about him. Ryan Day saying that Julian Sayin is, quote, in the mix for that starting quarterback job. And we will see how that ultimately plays out. I think, you know, it's probably still logical to say that Will Howard might be the favorite based on his experience at Kansas State. But I think he goes into this spring game needing to show something. And I think certainly for all the quarterbacks that are going to play in this game on Saturday, this is an opportunity for each of them to kind of end the spring on a high note and try to make an impression on Ryan Day, on Chip Kelly, as they evaluate things post-spring and think about where this competition stacks up going into the preseason.
It's a chance to grab a leg up for one of these guys. You know, I don't think it's going to be the spring game is never going to be the deciding factor in a quarterback competition. I don't think, you know, a lot of coaches are going to view it differently than fans, even us view it, because we don't get many chances to watch these guys on a day out, day in, day out basis like the coaches do. So, you know, all we really have to evaluate on in terms of 11 on 11 reps, good on good reps, is the student appreciation day practice we saw, and now the spring game. In terms of that student appreciation day practice, we've talked about our thoughts on that a lot before. You know, I thought Devin Brown had the best day overall in that scrimmage, and I think it's one of the reasons, one of the things for me that really stuck it in my mind that he's around in this competition. He is right there neck and neck with Will Howard. I think it is a very legitimate, like, they don't know who the starter is yet. And Julian Sayin, like you said, mixing it in. To my eyes, while I thought Devin had the best overall day, I thought Julian Sayin was right behind him in that student appreciation day practice. He lost his black stripe very early for quarterback especially. And every time Day talks about him, you get a little sense, you get a little more of an inkling that he's progressing and he's actually becoming a real factor in this competition, as talented as he is. I think it's clear he has the highest ceiling in the quarterback room. The question is, how fast does he get there? But I think every time Day talks, I get a little more confident in what Sayin could be even this year. And Wednesday's presser only magnified that for me.
Yeah, I think it came up during Wednesday's press conference that Julian is the fastest freshman who came in the spring to lose his black stripe. And, you know, that's just one factor. I mean, you don't want to read like too much into that, but at the same time, only two freshmen have lost their black stripes so far this spring. One of them is Jeremiah Smith, who, I mean, his buzz just keeps going up and up and up. And then there's Julian Sayin, and it does feel now like, you know, he is getting to that point where, you know, we have to not ignore him in this competition. You know, he's obviously, Will Howard has 27 games of starting experience under his belt. Devin Brown is in his third year at Ohio State. And so there's certain areas where Julian still needs to catch up to them. I think physically, you know, Ryan Day said that he's put on 15 pounds since he's gotten to Ohio State, but he still has some physical development to do. But, you know, I think the vibe around this competition right now is that Julian is the best pure passer that Ohio State has on its roster. And I think it becomes a question of if between now and September, if he can make up that experience gap, if he can have a really good preseason, you know, does there come a point where Ohio State's going to sit there and say, you know, this guy's our best quarterback, we got to play him right now? Or as Ryan Day mentioned during his press conference on Wednesday, you know, he said, you know, we need this guy to be ready to play against Oregon and Penn State and that team up north, as Ohio State would call it. You know, that tells you that they're thinking about, you know, this is a guy regardless of whether he wins the starting job going into the year, that Ohio State is thinking about the possibility that he could end up playing a major role for this team this season. And so it's going to be interesting to see how that ultimately plays out. I mean, I don't think either of us expect, no matter what happens on Saturday, that Ryan Day is going to step up to the podium after the game and name a starting quarterback. I think most likely this competition, one way or another, is going to continue into preseason camp. Now, there's the question of how many quarterbacks are going to be a part of that competition, because the transfer portal opens next week. You'd have to imagine some of those guys would like some clarity on where they stand in this competition come next week so that they can then make a decision on their future. And so, you know, Ohio State is going to have to figure out how to kind of navigate that. And, you know, some clarity in that sense could come after Saturday. But, you know, the way I see it right now is, like, if all three of these guys are still on the roster come preseason camp, I can see a reality in which Will Howard is the starting quarterback. I can see a reality in which Devin Brown is the starting quarterback. And I can see a reality in which Julian Sain becomes the starting quarterback. Andy, from your perspective, what do you need to see from each of those guys in Saturday's spring game if you're going to come out of Saturday's spring game feeling good about each of their chances to be the starting quarterback?
For Will, I think the answer is very clear for me. It's the deep ball. That was the main area he struggled on Student Appreciation Day. That's the main inconsistency, I think, that you see in his game in terms of the deep ball accuracy. And frankly, didn't have as much zip on some of the throws as I would have liked to see either on some of those deep passes. But you can, I mean, CJ Stroud made an incredible career here without zipping too many throws into coverage. He did that when he needed to, but CJ had, you can drop a ball in. You don't need to have a cannon to be successful as a quarterback. I need to see the accuracy from Will, because it simply wasn't there in that Student Appreciation Day practice. And it's one window of opportunity you get to see, but if it happens again, now it's a pattern, right? So want to see him connect on a few deep passes, or at least put it in a place where his receiver can make a play, because you're going to have these elite weapons on the outside. Give them a shot to go up and win a ball for you, you know? So I think that's the number one thing I'm looking for Will. For Devin, it's consistency. Seeing it on a play-to-play basis, that's something that Day has talked about a lot with Devin, is that he'll show flashes, he'll make some really nice scrambles, he'll make a nice play with his feet, he'll have a really nice throw. I think, like I said, he had a lot of great throws in that practice that we watched at Student Appreciation Day, but is that what he's doing day in and day out? Is that what you're going to get on a down-to-down basis from him? Will and Devin, I think, are going to get the most reps of the quarterbacks. So I think with all those reps that Devin should be getting, can you be consistent and deliver rep to rep on what that potential is? And for Julian, I think it's, you know, just play carefree a little bit. When you're a freshman, you're learning, you're absorbing. Taking that step, obviously you want to see all the things you look for in a quarterback from him, and like, be nice to see some leadership traits too from a freshman when you're talking about a guy who could step on and start in such a fast pace, you know. But ultimately, you're kind of playing with house money if you're Julian Sain. You've got two more years to be the starting quarterback at Ohio State. I think you and I would both predict that he will at least be the starter next year. But for now, you have the ability to go out and win this as a freshman, but it's definitely not going to hurt your career if you don't. So I just go out and play like that. Play loose, play free. Show off why you are in this mix, why your talent is different from the other two guys. So that's what I'm looking for from each player entering this spring game.
Now, certainly, I think our listeners are going to be intrigued to watch for quarterbacks. I'm going to guess, if we were going to poll our listeners on who are the two guys you're most excited to watch, I'm going to guess in one order or the other, it would be Jeremiah Smith and Caleb Downs, because those are the two guys. It's like, you hear their names, people get excited. We write anything about them, people read it. I think there's a ton of excitement for those two guys. So for the first opportunity to see them in Scarlet and Gray, in the shoe on Saturday is going to be a lot of fun. I mean, if this spring has been any indication, I certainly expect that we're going to see some fireworks from Jeremiah Smith on Saturday, because it just seems like every practice he's doing something big. I mean, there was the crazy catch last Friday that Ohio State posted on social media that got everybody excited. I know on Wednesday, Devere Posey was at practice and he tweeted that Jeremiah Smith had 350 yards into practice. Somebody else posted a video. I don't know where it came from since media was not at practice, but there was a video where he burned, I believe it was Aaron Scott, for a long touchdown. And so Jeremiah Smith, I mean, there's just every reason to expect right now that he's going to do something that gets people excited in this spring game. I don't think he really even has to, but I think, you know, if he does so, that hype train is just going to keep soaring up. And then, you know, Caleb Downs, I mean, my guess is we're probably not going to see Caleb Downs play all that much in this game, because he's somebody who's already a locked in starter on this defense. He's somebody that they're probably not going to want to, you know, overwork in this game. But I'm sure, just if it being his first time playing in a shoe, they're going to want to get him, you know, at least a couple series out there to get his feet wet. You know, Ryan Day did say on Wednesday that, you know, when the starters are out there, they're not going to be doing full contact tackling. And so you'd think Caleb is probably going to be in that group that, you know, he's only going to play on the FUD drives early in the game. But it's still going to be fun to see him. I think, you know, I still, like, we're almost at the point that, like, it almost still hasn't quite fully sunk in yet that this guy who was a superstar at Alabama last year is now playing for Ohio State. I think seeing him actually play or scrimmage, whatever you want to call it, in the shoe on Wednesday is going to make it really hit home that, like, yeah, Caleb Downs is a Buckeye now.
Yeah, that's going to be a surreal experience, I think. And we talked in the offseason before Ohio State landed him, when they were in the mix for him, about how this should be the best defense in college football regardless. But then you add that extra piece, that extra layer, to where, I mean, you talk about that nationally elite defense. Downs is now probably the best player on the defense. I mean, I don't think it's a stretch to say he's the best safety in college football. This is a guy that's a special talent. Fans are going to get to see that in first person. But going back to Jeremiah for a second, that the clip that was posted from Twitter was of him absolutely smoking, I believe it was Aaron Scott, on a double move, just a little hitch and go. And I wanted to highlight that for a moment, because I have talked a lot about polish with Jeremiah, about that the reason he is going to contribute as a freshman in a big way, and everyone else believes that now too, of course, and a lot of people believed it even before spring practice started, etc. I'm not alone in this take, obviously, but what I'm saying is,
really going out on a limb there.
Really going out on a limb. Jeremiah Smith is good. What I was saying about polish, though, coming into Ohio State, everyone knows the freak athleticism he possesses, and they see the incredible catches. But that play to me speaks to, again, how refined his game is. And that's why I think you could see huge, huge numbers, as much as the raw athleticism. The fact that he can run a route like that, like stop on a dime, perfect head fake, great shoulder and foot movement, then take off and the corners just burn. I mean, what do? You have the explosive speed and agility that he does on top of it. It's just like when you combine such polish, such a dedication to the craft with that raw natural athleticism, that is when you get a special player. And obviously, I'm not breaking news and saying that Jeremiah Smith is a special player.
Now, I know one position where your eyes are going to be going to, and I think a lot of people's eyes should be going to on Saturday, is the offensive line, because I think outside of a quarterback, that's the biggest question mark for this team right now. And I think, you know, this is a position, again, where Saturday could to some degree determine how aggressive Ohio State is over the next few weeks in the transfer portal. Because I think if you look at, if there's one position where Ohio State is going to be looking for talent in the transfer portal, looking for someone who could potentially come in and start, I think it would be on the offensive line, particularly on the right side of the offensive line. You know, Ryan Day said it on Wednesday that, you know, he can't sit here and say right now that that right side of the offensive line is solidified. And I think the big question mark spot right now seems to be right guard, where they've had, you know, Luke Montgomery seems like the front runner to start there right now, but Ryan Day said they've been mixing a lot of guys in there. You know, they've been moving Seth McLaughlin and Carson Hinsman over there at times. They've been moving Josh Fryer inside at times. They've been moving Tegra Shibola inside at times. They're working through a lot of options right there. And, you know, he didn't say it directly, but if you kind of read between the lines of everything we heard from Ryan Day on Wednesday, I don't think they quite feel like they have their guy at that spot yet. And so, you know, I think the question as we move forward to next week when the transfer portal reopens is Ohio State, you know, it, unless they come out of this week feeling like we've got our guy at right guard, would they then say, okay, are we going to look for a plug and play kind of guard to fill that spot? Or do they potentially look for an upgrade at right tackle and then slide Josh Fryer inside to right guard? Ryan Day continued to talk up Josh Fryer on Wednesday. So I fully believe Josh Fryer is going to be a starter on this offensive line this year. I think the question is still, is it going to be at right tackle? And you get the sense that they've been impressed by Josh Fryer's growth this year, but they feel like he can be that right tackle. But I still think there's a scenario here where they potentially bring in someone at right tackle and then move Josh Fryer over into that vacant right guard spot. But I think those two positions in particular, you probably lump center in there as well, where there's still that ongoing battle between Seth McLaughlin and Carson Hinsman. Those are certainly going to be positions to watch in this game because Ohio State is still looking to solidify that side of the offensive line.
Yeah, and obviously they have some great defensive linemen to evaluate those offensive linemen against. And I think the spring game is always conducive more to defensive line play than offensive line play. It takes so long for that front five to develop chemistry, and especially when there's ongoing position battles there. Don't expect that to be fully formed yet, but you can still evaluate one-on-one reps with guys. You kind of focus in on certain plays, on maybe what Luke Montgomery is doing, what Josh Fryer is doing, how they perform against some of these guys. The handful of practices we watched, Luke stood out, but obviously Day, Fry has seen a lot more of him. And, you know, it's the fact that he hasn't risen up and taken that spot yet is a little concerning, but still fairly early in his development. You know, it's hard for offensive linemen. It takes a while to season. That and tight end are the two most developmental positions in football, really. And you have to get your body right as well. Luke's added some weight in trying to transition to guard. I think that as far as the transfer portal strategy goes, Day definitely left that possibility open too when he was asked pretty directly about looking for a potential offensive line addition in the portal this spring. Didn't say yes per se, but certainly didn't say no. Basically said we're keeping all options open and going to evaluate it after the spring. So maybe this last Friday practice, the spring game, will be will help set up that right side going forward. I talked about Josh Fryer a lot and saying that I think guard is his best position because of some of the deficiencies he has as a pass blocker against pure speed off the edge. Thinking, you know, his feet not as agile as some other tackles out there, but still has great punch, great strength in the run game. And once more, I've said it like five times already, but you know, these coaches are better evaluators of talent than I could ever be. But to me, guard has been the best position for Josh. Now, I think he's gotten a little leaner. He's gotten a little quicker, perhaps. So if you can get to a place where you're able to stand up to those speed guys, and again, they have people to test him against in practice, then I think you like him at that right tackle spot. But I'll be very interested. Obviously, it will be very, very telling whether or not they pursue a transfer portal acquisition, whether that be at guard or tackle, or even someone who can play both. We know that this coaching staff seems to really appreciate versatility even on the offensive line. So very interested to see if they ultimately do pursue a transfer, and very interested to watch specifically the right side of this offensive line in the spring game.
Two other players that I'm certainly going to have my eye on in this game are CJ Hicks and Sonny Styles. Really the only real position battle taking place on the defense in terms of a starting spot this spring at that Will linebacker spot. Be interested to see, you know, first of all, just how are they deployed? You know, if one guy takes all the reps of the starters and another guy's taking, you know, second team reps, that might be a bit telling in terms of who's in the lead in that competition right now. If they're more mixed up, then that might tell you that the competition's still really close. Obviously, how they perform as well. You know, you wouldn't imagine in a spring game that we're going to see a whole lot of different packages, you know, free linebacker packages, heavy blitzing, anything like that. You're probably not going to see that in a spring game setting. So there's probably going to be some wrinkles with those two that we're not going to see until the actual games begin in the fall. But just to see how they perform in this setting, you know, it's going to be our first time to really watch Sonny Styles as a full-time linebacker. And then CJ Hicks, obviously a guy we've seen him flash in spring games before. So this doesn't tell the whole story, but you know, if he can show that he's continued to make that development, he was really impressive on Student Appreciation Day. So this is another opportunity for him to build off of that. Andy, is there anyone else who you are really excited to watch in this game on Saturday?
Honestly, these corners, every time I can see them, the physicality, the mentality, the war they're going to go with these receivers, not just the starting unit, but I also am interested to see if Bryson Rogers delivers on some of what we saw from him in that Student Appreciation Day practice in the spring game. Can he make a few explosive plays from the slot, make a guy or two miss? I don't know how much that top group of defensive backs is going to play, but also even again the depth matchups there against the depth wide receivers. When you talk about Jermaine Matthews Jr., who's obviously going to maybe contribute in some ways, how's Lorenzo Styles progressing? You know, just overall the matchup between these receivers, these defensive backs, is fun anytime we get to see it, and I think it's going to be very telling from an evaluation perspective of what Ohio State has in terms of depth at both of those positions.
All right, so we're going to play a little fun game now. We are going to have a little spring game fantasy draft, and here's how this is going to work. We're each going to draft one quarterback, one running back, one wide receiver, one tight end, and one flex player that can be any of the positions. Scoring, quarterbacks will be at 1 point per 25 yards and 4 points per touchdown. Running backs, wide receivers, tight ends, 1 point per 10 rushing and receiving yards, 6 points per touchdown. That's pretty standard fantasy football scoring. We'll each draft our teams. We'll score it and see who won next week, you know, for some bragging rights on the line. Certainly, you all can listen along and feel free to pick your own teams and let us know who you have on yours. But we will do this snake draft format. I'm going to flip a coin here, or a Google simulation of a coin here, to determine who gets the number one pick. Andy, heads or tails?
Tails, never fails.
We are flipping, and it is heads. So I guess tails does once in a while fail, but that means I get the first pick. And Andy, I don't think you're going to be very surprised, so I'm going to take the number one pick, because, I mean, I just said the guy is bound to produce some fireworks in the spring game. So I'm going to take Jeremiah Smith with the number one pick. Andy, you get the next two picks.
Drat, that was my number one pick as well, Dan. So this is interesting. I got to think of, you got to think value here. You got to think who's actually going to get a lot of reps. Like Emeka Ebuka, if we were drafting for the regular season, would be someone I take high. Not going to be someone I take for the spring game, probably. I'm going to go running back here and go Quinshon Judkins. I think they get him a decent amount of reps to continue getting him acclimated to the new offense. He doesn't have as much wear and tear on his body as Travion Henderson. He's been very explosive in the practices we've watched. And, you know, I think there's some value at running back here. So I'm going to take Quinshon Judkins. Then with my next pick, I feel like I need to take a receiver. Split between two guys. I think you know the two. And they're both... Yeah. I'm going to go Carnell Tate. I think they want to generate some buzz about Carnell. Again, we're not sure exactly how many reps the first teamers are going to get. Carnell is definitely a first team wideout, but he's not like Emeka Ebuka, who's played, you know, this is his fourth season. Carnell's only entering his second year here. So I think there's going to be some acclimation for him. They're going to try and get him the ball in some spots. So I think receiver is the other biggest premium. So Quinshon Judkins, then good old Carnell Tate at the three spot for me.
I'm just going to go ahead. I'm just going to stick on the freshman hype train here. I'm going to go Julian Sain. I'm going to take Julian Sain as my quarterback and predict a big day for him in the spring game. Like I said, it's hard. This one's a little bit harder to predict, like whatever rep's going to look like, because maybe they give a lot of reps to Devin and Will. But the way they're talking up Julian, I think we're going to see Julian get a good amount of reps, and I think he's going to make some plays. So I'm going to take Julian Sain as my quarterback, and then I'm going to go ahead and take my tight end as well. The spring game seems like a good setting for Jelani Furman to make some plays and get some people excited. So I'm going to go ahead and take Jelani Furman.
All right. Well, that leaves tight end pretty open for later. I'm not going to draft that till the end now. I will take Devin Brown, go ahead and get my quarterback off the board. I think that's, like I said, I think he's been the best all around in what we've seen this spring. And I think he's certainly not going to get less reps than Julian Sain. He will probably get more, I think. And I think he and Will are going to have a pretty heavy load in the spring game. We'll see. I think all the quarterbacks are going to play, obviously. But I'm going with Devin Brown as my quarterback. Next pick is a little, I'm probably going to go ahead and draft my flex here, get some value on that. And why not double up then? I'll take Brandon Ennis as my flex. So we'll get the second year duo that is in that starting mix at receiver to help bolster my fantasy football scoring here.
Interesting. I wasn't going to take Ennis because I'm not sure what his health status is for this game. So a little bit of a risk there because of his health status. But if he's healthy, that could prove to be a great pick for sure. Let's see. I need a running back. I'm going to go with James Peoples. Like, to your point, I don't think we're going to see Travion play very much in this game. So that's why I'm not taking Travion here. I could have gone James Peoples. I could have gone with TC Caffey, even with the way that he's been talked up as a walk-on here this spring. But I liked what I saw from James Peoples on Student Appreciation Day. I have a feeling we're going to see him get a lot of work in this game, once they decide, especially second half, once they probably decided, okay, that's enough for Quinshon. I think we'll probably see James Peoples get a heavy workload in this game. So I'm going to take him as my running back. And then to round things out with my flex, I am going to go with the other second-year receiver, and I'm going to take Bryson Rogers. The way that we saw him make some plays on Student Appreciation Day, he seems like the kind of guy, especially I think later in the game when they take those starting receivers out, who could make some plays and have himself a nice day in this game. So I'm going with Bryson Rogers as my flex.
That leaves tight end for me. This is a kind of a coin flip in my mind, because I think it's between Will Kaczmarek and G. Scott Jr. I'm not sure how much G is going to play, much like the other guys. He's this is his fifth year in the program. So I am going to stick with him as the starter, as a guy that they are seeming to wanting to build some buzz around, playing him at the pro day, talking him up at a lot of opportunities here. So I'm going to take G. Scott Jr. as my tight end here to round out this draft.
A quick recap. My team is Jeremiah Smith, Julian Sain, Jelani Furman, James Peoples, and Bryson Rogers. Andy's team is Quinshon Judkins, Carnell Tate, Devin Brown, Brandon Ennis, and G. Scott Jr. So we will have a little fun scoring this. See if I can get some bragging rights back on my side. The last time we did one of these drafts was the basketball draft, and Andy beat me in that one, largely on the strength of having Bruce Fortin on his team, which I did not. And so we'll see. We'll see if I can get him back this time, but we'll see. I mean, it's kind of a fun exercise for a spring game because it's very hard to predict like who's going to go off in a spring game. Sometimes it can be someone very random, but you never know, but I think the 10 guys we chose, I think were some pretty good choices. I'll have to say, like, I think if we did this 6 weeks ago, Will Howard was probably not going undrafted here. So we'll see if he makes us look foolish for not taking him here. But we will roll with those teams that we have. Getting away from a spring game for a little bit, obviously the other big news for Ohio State football this week coming on Monday when Dallin Hayden reportedly informed coaches that he would enter the transfer portal next week. Ryan Day declined to confirm that on Wednesday. He said, you know, he didn't want to get into those conversations. We'll see, you know, we'll see what happens next week. But if it hadn't happened, I think Ryan Day would have come out and said it didn't happen. So the fact that he chose not to comment, I think would tell you that it is true that Dallin Hayden is going to be leaving Ohio State, which I don't think comes as a shock. I mean, the reality is he was going to be at best the number three running back this year behind Travion Henderson and Quinshon Judkins. And he's good enough to start or at least play a lot at most schools. And so, you know, I think that's what this boils down to ultimately. I think certainly a lot of people are going to question the decision to redshirt him last year. And I think that, you know, that's fair, because I think that's why it was being questioned in the first place, because people are like, are we just saving another year of eligibility for him to go play at another school? And, you know, ultimately it looks like that's ultimately what's going to happen here. But I also don't think that's the reason why we're in this position. I think the reason why we're in this position is because Travion Henderson decided to come back and because Quinshon Judkins came to Ohio State via the transfer portal. And I think we'd both agree, while Dallin Hayden is a tough loss, if losing Dallin Hayden is the price of having both Travion Henderson and Quinshon Judkins this year, that's a price you're willing to accept.
Yeah, that's a price I'm willing to pay any day of the week when you talk about two backs of that caliber, two of probably the top five running backs in America, maybe number one, number two in some order. It's two incredible backs that, you know, this running offense is going to be built around, obviously. And, you know, Dallin was a player that I really liked. I thought that he should have gotten more of a shot last year. I thought, especially what he showed in the Purdue game, what he showed as a freshman, would have liked to see him stick around. But ultimately, his best opportunity is going to be elsewhere when you're entering year three and behind those two guys. On the depth of the running back room, it's really not in that dire a spot. At least that's certainly not how Day is acting. And I think a lot of that is because of your guy, T.C. Caffey, Dan, at least in terms of numbers. You have two freshmen backing up Travion Henderson and Quinshon Judkins and James Peoples, who's a player that, you know, I'm really high on. A lot of people are really high on out of Texas, a running back, and Sam Williams-Dixon, in-state prospect, who can give you some scat capabilities, give you some out-of-the-backfield receiving capabilities, those kinds of things. But TC's a guy who's been here a while. He has had an impressive run or two, namely against Toledo a couple of years ago there. A guy who I think this coaching staff clearly feels is comfortable with. They said five guys is what they need, and TC Caffey is the fifth to complete that picture and not feel like they have to go out and pursue a transfer to replace the depth that Dallin Hayden gave them. And overall, that's just a tough sell for running back anyway. Hey, want to come in and be our third stringer? Like, you know, who there aren't a lot of backs around the country that are worthwhile taking that would come in and be that third guy. You could get someone that's like a depth, very much a depth option, not that like high ceiling player, but that's not getting you out of bed in the morning. You have these two Cadillacs to lead off the position. If you're satisfied with, you know, the people you have behind them in case of emergency, then you're good to go. So I think Ohio State's running back depth, if the coaches are happy, I think it's in a good spot, knowing that TC Caffey gives you a little more than other walk-ons do.
Now, for what it's worth, there has been a little bit of chatter that they could still add another running back through the transfer portal. You know, I know that there's been a report out there from a UMass writer that Kayron Lynch Adams, who left UMass for the transfer portal, that, you know, there's a belief that he could end up at Ohio State. He's a Warren, Ohio native. He's a guy who ran for 1,157 yards and 12 touchdowns last season. To get him, that would be a great addition to your depth. Now, would he really want to come in and be the clear number three running back with how good he was last year? We'll have to see. But, you know, I think it is worth acknowledging that, you know, that name has been thrown out there. That, you know, that would be the kind of guy, if he just really wanted to be a Buckeye, that would be the kind of guy who would be worth bringing in as a depth piece. I agree with you in the sense that I don't think they need to chase. Like, if the right guy is not out there, I think as long as they don't lose anyone else, I think they are in fine shape with James Peoples, Sam Williams-Dixon, and T.C. Caffey presenting that depth. It's just a matter of, you know, if they were to lose someone else, then they probably would have to go look for a transfer running back. If the right guy is out there, they don't have to say no, and Dallin potentially opens a spot for someone else. But, you know, even if Ohio State doesn't add anybody, I mean, this is still the best running back room in the country with Travion Henderson and Quinshon Judkins leading the way. I mean, it's just the way it is in college football now. Attrition in these situations is inevitable. And this is just going to be the start. I mean, we don't know right now any other specific names that are going to enter the transfer portal next week, but you should expect that over the next couple weeks, we are going to see some other notable players enter the portal. Like, you know, I'm not talking starters, but I'm talking, I would anticipate that there's going to be a few notable names who enter the transfer portal post spring. And I'm not saying that like with specific names in mind that I'm just not revealing. I'm just saying that because of what everybody's saying, this post spring transfer window is going to be like. It's going to be a lot busier than the post spring transfer window has been in the past. At least that's kind of a word on the street out there. And so you'd have to think there's going to be some guys who are not in line to be starters this year, much like Dallin Hayden was in his situation, that are going to say, hey, you know what? If I can go somewhere else and maybe I can get some NIL money to come with it for me to go start somewhere else. There's going to be some guys who are tempted by that. And so it's going to be a very interesting story to follow for the next few weeks for sure, in terms of who does ultimately end up going into the portal, and then does Ohio State bring some guys back through the portal?
Yeah. Even listening to some of those national, you know, word on the street things, there are some big names nationally, it seems like people are hinting at could enter the portal, and it'd be a very crazy spring transfer window, which is definitely a change of pace from last year. I mean, my thought was when they first created the two window system was, of course, you're going to get like the first window is going to be the biggest window where all of, you know, after the season, guys who want to get in the portal are going to get in. And it's the spring felt more like backups, more like guys who just lost position battles at places, want different opportunities elsewhere. Maybe a few other names thrown in there, but mainly those kinds of players. This spring feels like we're in for something a little bigger. So if Ohio State can avoid losing anyone that's going to be key to a run this year, I think that's a victory in and of itself. And you might see some of those depth pieces shed. Like you said, not just guys that are like, you know, never going to play, but also some guys that maybe are kind of in that second wave, would have rotated in this year. That could certainly happen. And if it does, then Ohio State might then turn around and try to add similar pieces back through the portal, because as Day has reiterated time after time after time this offseason, you're playing 16 or 17 games this year if you want to win a national championship. So that demand on a college football player's body, you have to rotate guys, you have to roll depth at positions that you can. And they want to be three deep at every position as a result, guys they feel comfortable having in a game, which is a tall ask, but they're almost there or there at a lot of spots. And to get there, if there's more portal attrition, you're going to have to bring guys, other guys in from the portal. So that shift seems to be one that's coming in college football, a much bigger, more chaotic spring window. How hard does it hit Ohio State is going to be a storyline to watch here once the spring game wraps up.
Wednesday was our first opportunity to talk to Carlos Lachlan. I would say that he won the press conference, as they say, very engaging, very personable, you know, even came after the press conference, took the time to shake every media member's hand, which I thought was a nice touch. And so somebody, if you haven't gone and watched that press conference yet, it's on 11 Warriors YouTube channel. You know, he was quite entertaining talking about some of the messages he's gotten in his DMs from Oregon fans since he made the decision to come to Ohio State, and somebody who seems very excited to be with the Buckeyes. He said he was, quote, like a kid on Christmas when Ryan Day first reached out to him to see if he was interested in the running backs coach job. So somebody who I get the impression that Ohio State running backs are going to really like playing for.
Yeah, and recruits are going to love as well, I think. It's clear to see, you know, and his approach to recruiting was really cool to hear him talk about. He said he doesn't consider himself a recruiter. He considers himself an elite relationship builder. And you talk to anyone, you talk to our own Garrett Codge, you talk to whoever on the about recruiting, relationships are the top thing. That's what makes, even in this NIL era, NIL has kind of entered as that second big factor now, but relationships are still the top thing on the recruiting trail. And if you can build and develop real relationship with these guys, and this is someone who clearly, like, you can just tell the passion he has for running back play, for like you said, he won the press conference, and it was so funny hearing some of those anecdotes. You mentioned him getting the text from Day. He talked about how his wife, he showed it to her, and he was really excited, and she's like, "You think I know who that is?" Like, little things like that. He's a very personable person, but also very serious, very passionate about what he does. And from what Ryan Day said about him, that much was communicated in the interviews, and why, in Day's words, this was an absolute slam dunk for Ohio State. Having interviewed Carlos, or Locke, as he prefers to be called.
Coach Locke,
as he prefers to be called. And I would agree with that. The law enforcement background's very interesting, too. And he talked about how learning how to manage a prison block of 51 inmates trained him to be a disciplined football coach. He wants to work out as hard as his players and look better than they do. It's like these kinds of things. He's someone that you love talking to about that mentality. And I'm just excited to work with him as a press member, because he was a very fun interview on Wednesday.
Yeah, as he said, it's pretty easy to manage a room of 6 to 7 running backs compared to 51 prison inmates. So I think it's a very unconventional background for a coach, but I think that he's very much able to draw on that background and apply it to football. And I think just from hearing what Ryan Day had to say about Carlos Lachlan on Wednesday, you know, that was a factor in hiring him, is, you know, Ryan Day believes that unique background that Carlos Lachlan has is going to help him continue to grow as a coach. And I think there's a lot of very genuine excitement inside the Woody Hayes Athletic Center about Carlos Lachlan's arrival. Speaking of coaching staff hires, Jake Diebler has been doing some of that this week as well on the Ohio State men's basketball side of things. First off, on Monday, hiring Joel Justice as his associate head coach. I think we both agree that, you know, this is a hire that looks very promising for Ohio State. He helped lead NC State to the Final Four as an assistant coach this year, and he's got a great background as a recruiter. You look at him during his time at Kentucky, he helped recruit the likes of Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Bam Adebayo, Emmanuel Quickley, Brandon Boston Jr., Keldon Johnson, Johnny Juzang. Those are all 5-star recruits. So obviously you have some advantages to work with at Kentucky. But he was a key part of the recruiting process for John Calipari there. And then at NC State, he did a really good job of helping them build through the transfer portal. You look at the guys that NC State added this past season to their team that ended up in the Final Four. That included leading scorer DJ Horn, assist leader Michael O'Connell, and third leading scorer Jaden Taylor. And so I think that a strong hire for Jake Diebler, both in terms of the background and the fact that he doesn't have any super obvious ties to Ohio State or Jake Diebler, because you looked at a couple of the first moves he made, whether it be in terms of a hire or recruiting with adding Meechi Johnson through the transfer portal, with hiring Dave Dickerson. Those are guys who had been at Ohio State before. For Jake Diebler to go and get somebody who's a very highly regarded assistant from another, you know, strong program in NC State, I think, you know, that's a very good move for Jake Diebler in terms of hiring his right hand man.
Yeah. And that was the most impressive part to me, is that you went out and got a guy that you didn't have ties to. You know, Dave Dickerson was a hire that this is someone that has worked for Ohio State before, someone Diebler's familiar with, worked with. That to me, it made sense. But it wasn't like taking a big swing. This was a big swing in terms of assistant coaches. Basketball assistant coaching hires don't get as much, you know, notoriety as football assistants do. That's the reality of this business. But they are very key to building a program. And when you talk about what Justice can bring, I think this is about as big a home run as Diebler could have hit. The recruiting track record, the offensive track record, when you look where he's been and how the numbers have grown on offense, did that with NC State this year. They were second in the ACC in scoring, developed their shooters really well. Justice is it's a home run hire to me. And now that you've gotten a guy without Ohio ties on your assistant coaching staff, the thing I'm interested to see is, do you get a guy with no previous Ohio State ties? No known previous Ohio State ties, at least from the transfer portal, because there are, again, that's the assistant coaching staff is getting kind of rounded out here. The next thing that needs to be rounded out is the roster. And that's arguably the most important piece of this, is who do you go acquire from the transfer portal to build around what you have currently? Still need to get another guard, still need to get a big time wing scorer, still need to get another big. Are you able to expand the scope beyond people that have Ohio State ties in that area in the transfer portal and use it for talent acquisition? I think it's a great sign he was able to do it for the coaching hires. And sticking with the coaching hires, the other hire that just came across the bow on Wednesday was Jamal Walker out of Grand Canyon. Another good piece to round out the staff. Someone who's familiar with Big Ten basketball, worked at Illinois for 8 seasons, first under John Grocci and then under Brad Underwood, the current coach of Illinois. And just another piece to this puzzle. I think it'll be interesting to see exactly how the staff aligns. We're not exactly sure who's going to be filling which roles other than Justice's associate head coach. But good to see Diebler rounding out his staff here. And again, getting a real home run guy to be his right hand man in Justice.
Yeah. And still one more spot to fill on the coaching staff. You know, a couple names that have been floated there. Luke Simons, Baylor director of operations. There's, you know, been some smoke of it. He's a guy who's probably going to join the staff in some capacity. And then, you know, John Diebler, his brother as well, he's currently the director of recruiting at Butler. You know, there's been some word that, you know, he could end up joining his brother's staff. So neither of those moves official yet, but you know, one spot there left to fill. You know, possibly both of them could join the staff, and one of them might not be in that on-court coaching role. One of them could be in a support staff role. So it will be interesting to see, you know, how that ultimately unfolds. You know, Jamal Walker, a guy who does have some ties to Diebler because he worked for Bryce Drew at Grand Canyon. Bryce Drew being a key mentor for Jake Diebler as they worked together at Vanderbilt. Luke Simons worked for Scott Drew at Baylor, who is Bryce Drew's brother. And of course, you know, there's some question now, is Scott Drew going to continue to be the coach at Baylor because of Kentucky now having a job opening with John Calipari leaving Kentucky to become the head coach at Arkansas? And an interesting angle on that we learned on Monday night, after John Calipari accepted the job at Arkansas, was that according to CBS Sports' Matt Norlander, he had, quote, serious interest in the Ohio State head coaching job, but the timing wasn't right. And, you know, that certainly adds another layer to this Jake Diebler hire now, because we already talked about the inevitable comparisons of Jake Diebler versus Dusty May. Now you're also going to get the Jake Diebler versus John Calipari comparison, with the knowledge now being out there that Ohio State could have potentially had John Calipari because of his desire to leave Kentucky. Now, with that being said, I don't know how realistic it ever was going to be for John Calipari to come to Ohio State because of the fact that, you know, he was making $8.5 million at Kentucky. The reports are that he's making at least $7 million at Arkansas with incentives that could get that significantly higher. And so was Ohio State going to be willing to pay that much for a basketball coach? I would guess no. I also wonder if it would have been kind of a weird dynamic for John Calipari to go to a school where basketball clearly plays second fiddle to football. Because I think as much as I'm sure listeners out there want Ohio State basketball to be treated as a marquee program, and it's not to say that it isn't, the fact that John Calipari was interested tells you that, you know, if someone of that stature saw Ohio State as a place that he could go and have success, that tells you the potential that Ohio State has as a basketball program. But Ohio State's football school, we know that. I mean, it's why we just spent most of a show talking about football before we got to basketball stuff here. I think it would have been a little bit of a weird fit in that sense. I'm not shocked, honestly, to hear that he had interest, because you could tell that marriage with Kentucky was fraying even before the loss to Oakland in the first round of the NCAA tournament. But, you know, I think it's one of those things where if all things were equal, most people would probably take John Calipari, a coach who's won national championships, over Jake Diebler, someone who's never been a full-time head coach before. But it's maybe a little bit too simple to just look at it in a vacuum and say, Jake Diebler, John Calipari, which guy do you take? Because there's a lot of factors that go around that that ultimately led to Ohio State choosing to keep Jake Diebler instead.
Right. The timing aspect of it is interesting. You know, the quote that the timing wasn't right. When you look at where Jake Diebler was hired, obviously it has to do with player retention and keeping players on the roster. That's not the main reason they hired Jake. But I think Ohio State was in a position where they liked what they had in Jake. It was clear that Ross York believed in Diebler as a coach and decided to just pull the trigger on that and try to retain the roster rather than holding out for someone like Calipari, who, like you said, might not have been able to get anyway with some of the other considerations there. Arkansas, you know, they're kind of a good mix between basketball and football historically. I think that you know, they've been to 6 Final Fours as a basketball program, but obviously the South pretty crazy about football too. But willing to shell out some good money there. And was Ohio State willing to do that? Who's to say? It sounded like some of the things we heard, and just based on what they paid Holtman, what they're paying Diebler, that would have been a little out of their price range in terms of a $7 or $8 million contract to bring a guy on board like John Calipari. And, you know, to be fair, like, he hasn't been what he was the last few seasons, Dan. I mean, obviously, Kentucky lost to Oakland in the first round of this year's NCAA tournament. People were mad at Holtman for underachieving in the tourney for several years. I mean, this is a guy who has underachieved in the tourney quite a bit relative to the teams he's had. Even looking at, like, you know, considering the last 4 years, at some point his teams were in the top 10 of the AP poll, and now multiple times they've finished outside of the top 25 in the final AP poll. And, like, there's a reason the marriage with Kentucky frayed. I think you would rather have hired a riser, and that's what Jake Diebler is right now, a riser, if you're Ohio State, and someone who, yes, has an amazing track record like Calipari has, but also, like, is kind of coming off a little bit of a sore spot at his previous spot. So I think that there are, like you said, a lot of factors at play here beyond just, well, how's he going to do at Arkansas? And you could have had that, you know, it's a very complex thing. Even more so than Dusty May ultimately getting hired by Michigan, which is going to be one of the more interesting storylines to follow coming out of this going forward.
John Calipari has the same number of NCAA tournament wins in the last 5 years as Chris Holtman. They've both won one NCAA tournament game in the last 5 years. And so, you know, to your point, I think, you know, what would we say was probably the biggest failing for Chris Holtmann? It was his in-game coaching. And I think that's been the same thing that's drawn a lot of scrutiny for John Calipari. And so I don't doubt that if you hire John Calipari, you probably would have gotten some marquee recruits to come with it. But I don't think it would have been a guarantee of, you know, elite level success. And I think, like you said, too, I think Ohio State made this hire thinking about the long road and hiring someone who's a younger guy who's you know, on the rise in Jake Diebler might have been more appealing to Ross Bjork in terms of thinking about the long term rather than hiring someone who's in the twilight of his career in John Calipari. Speaking of long term, another big piece of basketball news on Wednesday afternoon as Ohio State landed a commitment from five-star point guard Marcus Johnson, the number one prospect in the 2026 recruiting class. Ohio State doesn't even have a commitment in the 2025 recruiting class yet, but it now has a commitment in the 2026 class. And this is a big one as he is the number one prospect in the state of Ohio, number four point guard, and number 24 overall prospect in the 2026 class. This is a guy who was named by Max Preps as the Ohio High School Basketball Player of the Year this year as a sophomore. So this is a guy who has a ton of talent, and he's also the cousin of Michi Johnson. So probably not a coincidence that this comes just 8 days after Michi Johnson announced his return to Ohio State. And, you know, that was one of the things when, you know, we talked about, you know, should Ohio State bring in Michi Johnson? That was one of the things that was in the back of my mind is, hey, if you bring back Michi, that's going to increase your chances of landing Marcus Johnson. And I don't know if I necessarily expected a commitment to come this quickly from Marcus, but not surprising after Michi chose to return that Marcus would also decide to be a Buckeye, because I think that family thinks very highly of Jake Diebler. I think it's fair to say, if Chris Holtmann's still the coach, this probably isn't happening right now, because I think, you know, there was, you know, probably between the Johnson family and Chris Holtmann, you know, probably some things that they were not quite aligned on, given the fact that Michi did choose to transfer to South Carolina a couple of years ago. And so I think, you know, you talk about hiring Jake Diebler, I think this is a recruitment that they have already won because of Jake Diebler, because this family already has a longstanding relationship with Jake Diebler, and they think very highly of Jake Diebler.
Clearly that connection paid off, but, you know, getting, just focusing on what Marcus Johnson brings as a player, already only a sophomore in high school, of course, but this is a kid who can shoot the daylights out of the three-point ball, off the dribble, off the catch, whatever. He was shooting 47% from three, wasn't able to find his final stats, but he was shooting 47% from three during the season, in Nike's Elite Youth Basketball League last year, 15U division. That was as a freshman in high school. And you look at his highlight tape, and he's hitting some dirty step backs. He's got a pretty refined 3-point game already, and also a great passing point guard. He's going to have probably more length than Michi. I imagine he keeps growing. He's already 6'1". That's going to be another factor in this. And he is just a great 5-star piece to have going forward. Top player in Ohio. This was a big win for Jake Diebler, even if, you know, you have the connections with Michi and he's an Ohio kid. Like, this is an awesome piece to build around for 2026 and to even just get some momentum generally on the recruiting trail, start getting some steam in 2025, like just trying to build for the future of this program. And we'll see what happens the next couple of seasons on the court before Marcus arrives. But that's going to be it's a very good building block to have just in your back pocket, you know, knowing that that's coming to town, in a couple of years here.
Well, we will be continuing to follow all the basketball news as that continues to develop, as Jake Diebler rounds out his coaching staff and as Ohio State looks to add a few more pieces for the 2024-25 season through the transfer portal. But we're certainly going to have a lot to talk about on the football front next week. following the spring game, as we'll be back to talk about everything we learned and everything that impressed us in the spring game. And so we hope you will join us again next week. Have a great week. Enjoy the spring game, and we'll talk to you soon.